This is Purple Radio on demand.
Excellent. Hello, and welcome to today's Discussion and Debate Society podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Today is a very special episode where we'll be talking a lot about consciousness, I imagine to some extent the human experience, but also whether consciousness extends beyond that. Because today's topic will be, is consciousness universal? And that's because we have a very special guest today. Alongside myself, I'm joined by my regular co-host,
Will,
and returning guest,
Sam,
and an incredibly special guest today, a professor at the university in which we all study,
Philip Goff.
Exactly.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I'm not that special, but you're very, very kind to say so.
Yes. At the start of this podcast, Will has been the one that wanted this to happen most, so I've been briefed thoroughly to not brief myself thoroughly, so I'm afraid I don't know a huge amount about panpsychism. I've just had sort of the earliest forays into it, and it's very interesting.
We wanted to feel like a light, friendly interrogation of the ideas.
Sounds good.
From like a pub perspective.
Makes sense.
We can't have our listeners having to think.
Absolutely not. That would undermine
the form. Heaven forbid.
But that's essentially what, because this podcast is based on, which we colloquially call DADS, but stands for Discussion and Debate Society.
Yeah, it makes sense. Good to keep things accessible and bring in a broader group of people.
Shall I read the thesis?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. This is, of course, provided by Will. Is consciousness universal? The answer to what exactly entails consciousness is heavily debated. Natural science is seen as the modern answer to everything, both epistemically and spiritually, but hasn't been able to provide a clear and sound explanation for consciousness. Physicalism is a view which prioritizes physical occurrence as coming before any supervenience over it. It tends to argue that individual beings have separate consciousnesses. Panpsychism, championed by Philip Goff, who is in the studio today, states that consciousness is universal, as it is a phenomena present in even the smallest electron, albeit with great simplicity. The belief is that consciousness is responsible for the world's physical manifestations, rather than the other way around. Does this stand up despite the lack of hard evidence? What is the meaning of a singular consciousness? Does it allow for a separation between radically different conscious experiences in the form of clusters? At what point does consciousness become an intelligent experience? Was physicalism ever disproven?
That was lovely. That was a very good way of capturing it. Yeah, I suppose these rival views, panpsychism, physicalism being two of them, and I think the panpsychist one fulfills its explanatory aspirations better than the physicalist one.
Yeah, according to you, it wins out because the physicalist view. I watched the debate with
Sean Carroll.
Sean Carroll, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was an argument on psychism versus physicalism.
Yes.
And what interested me was that while I do agree that, so for some basic groundwork, Gabriel, ignorant Gabriel.
Yes, very much so.
The physicalism is a process of explaining. So the physical process becomes before the consciousness, right? So
basically the physical reality, consciousness is an emergent property of the physical reality,
yeah,
rather than sort of the panpsychist view that physical reality is an emergent property of the consciousness of these things.
Exactly.
The basic things.
Yeah.
And what the problem with panpsychism for me is that, I say this as someone who likes it, is that it's a theory that sounds logically sound, but I don't know where the hardest evidence comes in. That's the reason why Carroll is all right with his theory, because he's I might not have any hard evidence for why consciousness manifests in this particular way. It's not a matter of we need the evidence right now. It's that we have the opportunity to get it. And panpsychism is something that's assumed over.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I always want to emphasize is each of them is empirically equivalent, by which I mean, for any scientific data, each of these theories will just interpret that data on its own terms.
Yeah.
So you can't sort of do an experiment to find out which is right. And I think that's very uncomfortable. And I think we're in a very scientistic time when people think all questions can be answered with experiments, and if you can't answer it with an experiment, it's not a real question.
I've noticed you're a fan of Russellian monism.
Yes.
You called him in the debate with Sean Carroll, quote, the Darwin of consciousness.
Bertrand Russell, yeah.
Is that a statement you'd stand by?
Bertrand Russell, yeah, I think so. So, yeah, so if these views are experimentally equivalent, right, how can you decide between them? One thing I think you can do is look at how well they fulfill their explanatory aims, right? So the physicalist hopes to explain consciousness in terms of physical processes in the brain. So we can ask, how well has that gone? I would argue not very well. But then the panpsychist tries to do it the other way around, tries to explain physical reality in terms of consciousness. And we can ask, how well is that going? And I would say, we've worked out how to do it. I think Russell...
For a clarification on what Russellian monism is, as far as I'm aware, because I've never been taught about it, I briefly read the Stanford article.
You know, my philosophy of mind class?
No, I never did it.
Oh, right, okay.
That's why I couldn't find the room. I've never been here before.
Sorry, I would have given you the right. I didn't appreciate you having been here before. Anyway.
Yeah, we're recording in Philip Goff's... office,
so that we can truly experience the heart of this subject.
It's a bit of a mess.
We come to the home of the leading figure in panpsychist philosophy.
Still haven't brought all my books back up since the pandemic. I'm sort of
in a compromised state without all his books. But anyway, right. So
So Russell was in the 1920s thinking very hard about the fact that our most basic science, physical science, is purely mathematical, right? And this is something we kind of take for granted, but it was a revolutionary decision of Galileo in 1623 to say, right, from now on, what he called natural philosophy, what I guess we now call physical science, is going to be purely mathematical. And that's very useful if you're a practicing physicist, because you can get very precise predictions and so on. But Russell was thinking, what does it mean if you're a philosopher interested in the ultimate nature of reality? What does it mean that physics is just maths? And what he decided it meant was that physics doesn't really tell us what fundamental reality is. It's just describing its mathematical structure. So as far as physics is concerned, fundamental reality could kind of be anything. As long as it has the right mathematical structure, that's all physics cares about. So it's kind of what Stephen Hawking was getting at in the final page of A Brief History of Time, when he said, even final physics will be just a bunch of equations. It won't tell us what breathes fire into the equations and makes a universe for them to describe. Okay, so the panpsychist kind of exploits this. This is probably the most technical bit, but the idea is, well, what's at the fundamental level of reality for the panpsychist is these sort of networks of very simple conscious entities interacting in simple, predictable ways. Through their interactions, they make certain patterns, certain mathematical structures. And then the crucial claim is that those mathematical structures just are what we call physics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's consciousness that breathes fire into the equations. I think we can't get consciousness out of physics, but I think Russell showed us precisely how to get physics out of consciousness. We know that can be done. So we're comparing two explanatory projects, one of which is never got anywhere and is arguably incoherent, the other of which has already been completed. It just feels a bit weird, but, you know. So
the idea. Under this sort of model or idea, would it be essentially, like, considering, the strong force between two particles or the weak nuclear force or something, would that be almost the two particles just conscious awareness of one another? And for whatever reason, they're aware of certain elements, and so they pull together.
Yes, I mean, another way to people put this point is just that physics is sort of telling us what stuff does rather than what stuff is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I sometimes say physics is like kind of like playing chess when you don't know what the pieces are made of. But that's okay, because all you need is to play chess is to know what they do, right? And that's why physics allows us to make incredible technology, because you know what stuff does.
I mean, like, but science is based on, like, a load of assumptions, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, was that Kuhn? Thomas Kuhn. And the idea that, like, scientists work from automatic assumptions based on the world so that they're able to get work done, basically. And that therefore, anyone who's like, oh, this science, this is the answer. This is just assuming that science is automatically right when the paradigms change all the time. So, like, even if you are, like, a pure physicalist, that doesn't mean that, like, you're getting anywhere close to the truth, because you could be in the wrong direction. I feel like this is something that, like, there's a real cockiness about certain scientist people that, like, philosophy isn't relevant.
Yeah, there's always, I think, philosophy in the background. And if you say, oh, I don't do philosophy, I'm not interested in philosophy, what happens is Stephen Hawking's later book, I can't remember what it's called now, but it famously started off, the first line was, philosophy is dead. And then it went on to do terrible philosophy in later chapters, talked about free will and metaphysical realism, yeah, and stuff. But, you know, I mean, obviously he was a very intelligent guy, but he hadn't read that much philosophy. He hadn't, you know,
yeah.
He hadn't had his philosophical ideas scrutinized in the way you do if you're, you know, a professional philosopher. Like the paradigm I've been very interested in my book, Galileo's Error, quick plug there, is...
I was going to say at one point when you said Galileo again, I was planning to go, is this Galileo's Error? Well, you've ruined it for me now. Yeah, I should have. I meant to earlier. But then,
self-explain. Yeah. But yeah, when Galileo decided everything was going to be mathematical, he appreciated you can't capture the consciousness in those terms. You can't capture the qualities of consciousness, if you like, you know, the smell of coffee, the taste of mint, the redness of a sunset. Like, an equation can't capture that sort of deep red. So Galileo says, well, if we want science to be mathematical, we need to take consciousness and these qualities out of the story. They're sort of in the soul. They're outside of science. So then once we get the qualities out, we can capture everything else in mathematics. And I think this links, well, I would link it back to what Gabriel said earlier about, well, look, we should have faith that science is going to deal with this because it's been so successful. But from that, the historical, bringing in that bit of history I just gave, I would say, the reason it's been so successful is because Galileo kicks it off by taking consciousness out of the picture so everything can be captured mathematically, right? So physical science has gone so well since and because consciousness is taken out of the picture.
By so making that, an assumption, they've massively simplified the endeavor.
I mean, but in a way, it's a provocative title. I mean, I think that was a good decision. But if we want to bring consciousness back in to the story, we have to rethink that philosophical paradigm that Galileo bequeathed us 400 years ago and find a way of bringing together these two domains Galileo separated. And I think panpsychism looks to be a good way of doing that.
I collected a list of comments from some of your harshest critics.
Brilliant. Bring it on. Don't worry, I'm used to abuse. Lucky to have a thick... When I wasn't bullied that much at school, even though I was a weird kid. I think I wasn't bullied because, like, it never really bothered me that much, you know. And so then you're not a good target.
Bullying is in the mind of the perceiver.
I think that's been my big asset, actually, is not big, because I do get a hell of a lot of abuse on social media and panpsychism, and I'm just not that bothered.
I've taken a collection of comments from Twitter, Reddit, and YouTube.
Oh, good.
Yikes.
The worst three.
Whoa.
I don't understand why Philip keeps saying panpsychism is the way to explain everything and then never explains anything. It's like a promise that never delivers. I just don't understand consciousness any better by hearing of its fundamental. It sounds an awful lot like the enchanted world of the pre-scientific days.
Steve.
Damn. That was rough.
I'm very joking. No, I get that a lot. I mean, in a way, I think they said it doesn't help me understand consciousness. In a way, it's not supposed to be helping you understand consciousness. It's taking consciousness for granted and explaining physical reality. Just as, you know, it's the mirror image of what the physicalist is doing. The physicalist is taking physical reality for granted and then supposedly explaining consciousness. It's doing it the other way around. I mean, I just explained Bertrand Russell's view about how that works out. So I suppose I'd want to know from this person why they don't agree with that explanation Russell gave, but they didn't really say anything.
I have a feeling they don't know about that part.
I was
reading through all of them. I thought the worst comments were on Twitter quite consistently.
Not really. I never go on Reddit. I should go. Ask me anything on Reddit.
I thought Reddit was quite nuanced relative to. Yeah.
It does feel like, at its heart, the distinction is more a choice of axioms than anything else. Like, that doesn't mean that one won't be true and the other will be false, but it sort of comes back to that idea of pure mathematics, to me, as someone who studies pure mathematics, that in the end, they're both sort of attempting to describe a universe, and it's just which bit you start from and then try and figure out how the rest of it is going to work.
Nice way of thinking about it, I suppose. It depends what you mean by choice, I suppose. I think one of those is the better choice.
What you're doing with it is you're taking these like natural processes or what have you, and you're taking those as sort of your axioms, your starting points, the laws of physics, and then you're trying to derive everything, and then meeting consciousness, and then not really having derived consciousness, an experience which we at least tend to hold is real and not just an illusion or something. In that case, starting with consciousness, if you're then able to derive the rest of reality in the physical laws, that is certainly a more successful explanation.
But is that really what's going on? I mean, surely physicists would argue they're not taking physical laws as axioms on theory, they're observing those laws. Whereas I'm not sure there's a basis, like you alluded to with experiments, say, what I was going to ask you was, how does smaller things being conscious help more complex things being conscious? Because it seems like this is a naive objection maybe, but you have a similar problem to the physicalist, that how do you explain how higher consciousness or what the hierarchies of consciousness are? Like, say, like if there's electron in my hand that you say has some sort of experience, and then there are like levels up, like molecules, they'll have an experience and then a cell will have experience. That seems to be adding more complexity. I don't know, like Occam's razor, it seems to go against Occam's razor. It seems like you're adding a lot of stuff that needn't exist to explain why I'm just conscious. Like, why does everything I'm made of have to be conscious? If you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's not a naive question at all. It's a really crucial objection. It's Sam, is it? Sam's like, edit that out. Yes. What you're getting at there, Sam, is what is usually called in these discussions the combination problem. You know, okay, you postulate in, I don't know, what, little conscious particles or something, but then how do they come together to make our consciousness or the consciousness of other animals? You know, that's ultimately what we want explained. So that's something that's at least hard to make sense of, and some would say incoherent. Did you want to come in?
Yeah, do you think this needs to be justified, or do you think that's just the job of future scientists?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of really interesting proposals for how to make sense of that. We could talk about some, like, it gets technical a bit quickly, but, and in a way, you know, connected to what Will was saying, it's sort of early days, and I think it would be reasonable to sort of give time to work on that. I still think panpsychism is a very attractive theory because it can explain physical reality in terms of consciousness stuff. So, like, if it could also explain our consciousness in terms of particle consciousness, great, that's a bonus. But even if it can't, it's still got its central explanatory value of explaining the physical world in terms of consciousness. As I say, like, it's the mirror image of what the physicalist is trying to do. And thus, it bottoms everything out in just a single kind of stuff. So I think that's very attractive from an Occam's razor perspective, because it's just one kind of stuff at the fundamental level of reality. Just as, you know, physicalism tries to bottom out one kind of stuff, that would be attractive if it could be made to work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Some critics have accused you of being a physicalist. What would you say to that? I can read you the exact quote if you want.
Judge.
The harshest critic of panpsychism, to call it physicalism.
I find Goethe to be a puzzling figure. On the one hand, I like his advocation and articulation for panpsychism and the fact that he's an anti-physicalist. On the other hand, I think he says things that implies he's a constitutive panpsychist and is some type of physicalist, so he contradicts himself.
I do get a lot of these sort of very intense idealists. So idealists also think that consciousness is at the fundamental level, but perhaps think that the physical world is an illusion in some sense, or is constructed by us. Donald Hoffman has defended something like this view. And I find you get a lot of intense idealists. I think, look, we've kind of got similar views. We're like, but they get a bit intense. Yeah. Like, I'm in a compromised position. I'm too much believing in the physical world. I'm sort of watering it down. It's not pure enough.
Answers.
Well, it's not physical. It depends what you mean by physicalism. Actually, Galen Strawson, who was my PhD supervisor, he calls his panpsychism physicalism because he just uses the word physicalism in a very broad way. So, like, the physical is just sort of this stuff, whatever it is. And if this stuff turns out to be conscious, then it's
that's what the stuff is.
Yeah, but I think that's sort of too broad to be helpful. But I don't think that's what this person is getting at. I mean, it's not physicalism because there's consciousness at the fundamental level, and usually that's, like, by definition, inconsistent with physicalism.
Hmm.
Okay, they want to say, oh, well, it's still too close to physicalism. I mean, that's what I like about panpsychism, is that it's, in terms of the structure of the physical universe, and
it's still keeping
it's just like physicalism. It's, you know, physics gets, there is stuff out there, and physics gets its structure right. You know, so I guess I'd want to hear from them, well, what is wrong? What is wrong with being that close to physicalism?
You can go back to the Reddit thread from 2 years ago and comment. I have a page of these.
But how did you find all these?
Oh, I just typed in Philip Goff Reddit, Philip Goff Twitter.
I see.
Okay. And then I went on some YouTube videos. I'll read another one, actually.
Okay. We'd be weeping into a coffee, but
a new segment of the podcast I was unaware of.
Comment section.
Yeah, we're going to do it with every guest from now on. Of course, for most people, it'll be quite hard to find anything. But
dear Dr. Goff, I am a Nigerian prince. Since reading your books, I have realized that every grain of sand in Nigeria is conscious. I would like to start taxing the sand, which will bring in about 800 billion per year. What is your response to this?
Was not. Count me in. Was that in response to something I tweeted?
I put Simon on.
Yeah, I think I was talking about how I can't answer email. I used to write, like, every email someone sent me, who I don't know, I used to answer.
Yeah, I did read this.
I just get daily emails and letters, and someone sent me something. I'll show you. Someone sent me books. Someone sent me all gift wrapped.
Oh.
So then I feel like
have you not opened this?
Young kids. I was going to take a photo before I opened it. Maybe I'll see.
Well, you can do it now. We can stall the time.
So you know, then I feel so guilty. People must think I'm a horrible person, but, like, you know, I've got young kids, and it's sort of like
there is a limit to the amount of time you
get. Not spend time with my kids, if it.
You should get a secretary.
That would be lovely, but I'm not rich enough.
In handwork.
If I...
I'll just take on a PhD student and force them to do it.
Daniel Dennett's stuff on kind of sensory stuff, and I find it reasonable, and it seems like a project that's going somewhere, but you've said several times you think the project's gone nowhere, or that even you alluded to earlier that maybe... it's incoherent in the first place. Could you talk more about that, just a kind of anti-physicalist rationale for that?
Yeah, no, I was joking with my groan. He's a very great and important philosopher. I spent a week on a boat in the Arctic with Dennett, actually. There was this billionaire Russian investor who wanted to spend a week on a boat in the Arctic with 12 philosophers about consciousness and free will.
Sounds like a bad film. Like Triangle of Sadness.
There's a Guardian long read on it actually before.
Okay.
But sorry, that's just of course. Yeah, of course there was a Russian oligarch.
I hope he paid you well.
You should fit that into every conversation.
That's brilliant. Young, he was you're feeling me. And it's really weird. It's like, I've never sat someone a billionaire.
You think he's one of those kind of guys who's like, if I surround myself with smart people, I'll become smart.
Actually, it's someone who knows quite a bit about consciousness, actually, and has written a book on Dennett called Boston Zombie. What were we talking about anyway? Oh yeah, so yeah, Daniel Dennett
just an anti-physicalist.
Yeah, okay, look, to be clear, what I said has gone nowhere is physicalism, which is I take to be distinct from the science of consciousness.
Okay.
Which is, you know, made so like I've had three debates at least with the neuroscientist Anil Seth, and you know, I've read his great recent book, Being You. Which ended up coincidentally having a cover that looked very much like mine. I didn't disagree with any of it. He's talking about the wonderful science, and he then just adds, oh, I'm a physicalist, and takes them to be the same thing. But I think, you know, most of the science is just neutral on all this stuff. But, you know, Dennett's, you know, a very well-informed philosopher. I mean, basically his view is consciousness doesn't exist. Now, I have to be careful about, because it depends what you mean by consciousness. In his early publications, he used to pretty straightforwardly say it doesn't exist. And, you know, David Chalmers thinks about it, you know, over time, he's sort of saying, well, so we can put it like this, right? He believes in consciousness insofar as it's just defined in terms of observable behavior. Not just external behavior, but like behavior of bits in the brain as well.
Yeah.
And then there's no mystery, right? It's just a scientific question what the bits, the brain do, I just think that's not what, and I think most people think that's not what we mean by consciousness. When I say my wife's in pain, it's a claim about how she feels, and that's just a very different claim. And Dennett would say, oh, well, we're tempted to think there's something that's not logically connected to behavior, but that's an illusion. I don't think he's got ever given us a very good argument for that, apart from sort of heavy rhetoric. I mean, he's got some nice little, he calls them intuition pumps of trying to get us into thinking it's a ridiculous thing. But so really, that's what he's doing. He's not solving any problems. You know, his famous book, Consciousness Explained, people say, joke that it's consciousness denied or something. But insofar as by consciousness, you know, I mean, I present a podcast, quick plug, Mind Chat, with a Dennettian who says, so I think consciousness is everywhere. He thinks it doesn't exist. What do you think?
No, I was surprised when you said, maybe that is because I'm a physicalist, and you said physicalists think, you know, trying to explain why we're conscious or the science of consciousness is what they're all about. But why do you think, how are they different? Could you just clarify that? That people who would think they need to explain consciousness through processes in the brain and emergence and complicated networks and whatever, and that's their job, and they consider that the physicalist project, but you're saying that's different from physicalism.
There's the science of consciousness, then there's physicalism, then there's Dennett's physicalism, which I take to be a quite radical extreme.
I think the problem is we don't have a shared idea of what consciousness is, so we're not working from the same like level, but trying to describe slightly different things.
Yeah, maybe. Probably, at least in the case of Dennett, but people often say, yeah, we don't know what consciousness is, and Gabriel said it before. I don't like that way of putting it, because I think we kind of do know what consciousness is. We're just talking about like our feelings, and you know what pain is when you feel it. It's just a feeling. I think the mystery isn't so much what consciousness is, but like how it fits in with the other stuff we know. Although with someone like Dennett, yeah, I suppose you'd be disagreeing on the very meaning of consciousness. But with most physicalists, actually, they're happy to agree with people like me on the definition of consciousness.
Okay, so for this guy, for example, would you say that this is someone who's treating your arguments in bad faith? I can't stand this guy.
Tell me what you really think. God.
That's the whole thing. Whether I see him on the Joe Rogan Experience or here, I never learn anything about consciousness. She can chew up 3 hours at a time talking about matter, physics, animal neuron count versus human neuron count, but never explains anything about what consciousness is. Why is he famous in his field?
I'm worthy of comment, surely.
Sometimes it'd be good to just hook up and have a conversation on YouTube or something. There's some guy who emails me piece of things, and I tried to talk to him for a bit and engage and stuff. And actually, when I engaged, he calmed down and he was quite nice.
Mm.
And then I said, "Look, I'm really going to have to stop the conversation now because, like, got to feed kids or whatever." And then he got really abusive again.
Are you keeping him on because you find him amusing? Or...
I was thinking of just having him on my podcast and just some of
you
the,
probably written...
Yeah, you should. Yeah. There's no paragraph if you want to.
Oh, God.
He doesn't have a clue what consciousness is. On both podcasts, he talks about anything and everything except consciousness. He talks about people's personal experiences, people's personal perceptions of things, but does not ever explain what it is. Where is it? What is it? Is it in our brain? What part? Where does it come from? Which cortex? What's the voice in our head?
Oh, they have a voice in their head? Okay.
Again, I mean, part of this might be, I don't think that's the interesting question. I think consciousness is just what it's like to be you. We all know what it is. I had this problem with Joe Rogan himself, actually. I think, like, if you're a scientist and people don't know what you're talking about, they think it's their fault.
Yeah.
But when you're a philosopher and people don't get it, they think it's bullshit because I think they should get it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I prepared for Joe Rogan watching, you know, him talking to scientists. I didn't really know who he was. I'm talking to scientists and he's just like, "Wow, man, that's amazing." So I thought he'd be like that with me. it was hysterics in my Joe Rogan. But you know, he sort of, I hadn't done a lot of talking for Jim Logan at that point. I think it was a bit too complicated. Mm. And he didn't know what the hell I was talking about. He just wanted to know, you know, does his table have feelings? And then he's sort of like, "This is bullshit. I don't get it."
Okay, so anyway, getting to the core of the question, because we haven't really, we've skirted around the question, but let's answer the question now. Is consciousness universal? If you say that consciousness is based on feeling, right, based on your feelings, does this mean that it's a separate consciousness, or is it just one part of the whole universal consciousness?
Right, so I think what you're getting at sounds reminiscent to, I guess, these traditions in Hindu mysticism, for example, that...
I was thinking of Neil deGrasse Tyson personally.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, though, does he get? There are, you know, cross-cultural mystical experiences of sense of oneness, or this what people are getting at when they say we're all one. And in the Advaita Vedanta tradition and Hindu mysticism, there's the idea that in some sense we're all the same consciousness. Very good philosopher Miri Albahari has tried to articulate this view in a very rigorous analytic way.
Sure, but like when we say like we're all one, that doesn't necessarily have the cultural implications that people think it has. So like you know the band Primal Scream.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, there's this song, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like we're all one. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, but as it's, yeah, so I don't think panpsychism needn't imply that. And
what do you think?
What do I think? Buddhists think it's the sort of non-existence of the self. Hindus think it's discovering our identity with God or ultimate reality. Christians think it's to do with a special intertwinedness with God rather than being identical with God. So, God knows. I suppose, you know, you can be more... If you're a physicalist, you have to think it's all a delusion. If you're a panpsychist, you can be more open to these mystical views. But it's definitely a further step. David Chalmers is always telling me off for talking about religion, saying, "We're trying to get the serious science, stop talking about that rubbish." So some panpsychists are very secular.
Mm.
You know, they just think we need another paradigm of explanation for mundane human consciousness, feeling pain, seeing red. But... I'm up for a bit of mysticism, but which direction you take it in is very uncertain.
Yeah.
All right. I find that quite interesting as well, because I suppose you could sort of think of just space-time in the universe and then
think of everything as just part of one shape as well.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of like, which would be a sort of physicalist idea of perhaps like deterministic reality in which consciousness, say, doesn't exist. It's all just a series of predetermined processes. But
that's what Neil deGrasse Tyson says.
Right.
I've always found this view a bit weird. He's like, I don't mind. He's like, I don't mind death because we're all one consciousness. We're all bits of a star that fell from the sky.
That's beautiful. So many different emotions in this conversation.
That's what we try to bring. Sort of emotional whiplash is the aim of our podcast.
We may have once called the podcast the Shut Up and Listen podcast. What was it? Remember that?
I faintly recall it.
Yeah, with Ben. We call it like the Agree and Shut Up podcast.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we're also the Feeling podcast, you know. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. We've talked a lot about particles, but many theoretical physicists are more inclined to think our reality is made up of universe-wide fields. Particles are just local vibrations in those fields. If you combine that with panpsychism, then...
Just to clarify, so I'm trying to get the core idea. Is it that because consciousness is fundamental, then... You don't need to explain anything like that. That gives us a reason for why we observe our own consciousness. Like that's it answers the question. Like it avoids that problem because it's just saying, okay, we're going to say on a theoretical level, consciousness is the fundamental thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just still confused about how we get after
us. Crucial point is you explain physical reality in terms of consciousness.
And how are you doing that? I still don't.
So the idea. This is Russell's point that. Because physics is just a load of mathematical structure,
yeah.
So the panpsychist postulates just consciousness. The point is, you want what's at the bottom of reality to be as simple as possible. The physicalist tries to get everything to bottom out in physical stuff, just one kind of stuff that would be simple.
Yeah.
Panpsychist tries to get everything to bottom out in just consciousness stuff that would be simple. So either is both simple. I don't think you can do the first one, but I think you can do the second one. So that's the benefit of it. It's not about trying to explain our consciousness.
Okay.
It's we can explain physics in terms of consciousness stuff. Probably going to have to...
We've got past the...
Wrap up.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I am really enjoying this, though. Just
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much for agreeing to come on.
I did want to ask one thing. I got the idea... So I'd be quite interested to see a conversation between you doing your Joe Rogan voice and Sam doing his Lex Freeman voice.
I'm not going to do a Lex Freeman impression. Well, no. I don't think you can ask for Lex to do a Joe Rogan impression.
Come on. Oh, he can do it.
I can't.
Well, if you watch our first episode, you can see Sam's Lex Freeman.
Lex Freeman. Yeah, he speaks quite slowly.
Dostoevsky.
On that phone.
Yeah, thank you for coming
on. Thank you
very much. Yeah, that was really fascinating. Well worth.
Thank you.
I think this has been a rather good episode from my co-host Will and guest Sam and, of course, very special guest Philip Goff, and I have been Gabriel D'Souza. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully we'll see you, Wednesdays, ER149 at around 7:30 p.m. for our regular discussions. Thank you. Goodbye.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.